Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Jane Steinberg.
So, Mark, I'm wondering through all this, we have all this debris from something, but we don't have anything that shows a crew, a interior of some sort with interior accoutrements such as chair or a control panel or anything technological that might be used in producing some kind of flying device, just some sheets of whatever.
Yeah, basically, that's what we've got. We've just got a tremendous number of extremely expensive pieces of metal. You know, there was one website, which shall remain nameless, that got very sensational, and they put the story out as per the documentary. And they actually finished the story with this big silver disc sticking out of trees with two alien bodies hanging out of it. But they basically made that up. You know, it didn't, that's not what happened. Part of the beauty of the story, part of the mystery of the story, is we don't have the rest of it. And clearly, from a military perspective, if this is one of ours, there aren't that many vehicles known that would stay airborne, not after this. And that's a general comment. That's generally been observed by people involved in the case. So there's nothing impacted anywhere else in that particular Welsh Valley. And in order to get out of the valley, you have to climb to get above the height of the mountains. So that's something that this thing clearly did, because it didn't leave anything else behind. And there have been, I mean, it's in a thing that's known as a UFO triangle. It's the Welsh Triangle, where you've got low valleys that are below the radar level, and things are regularly seen coming up out of Cardigan Bay. These lights rise up out of the bay to the point where the local RNLI, the lifeboat station, have got the Air Force phone number, and when any of these things are seen coming up, they just ring the airbase and say, hang on, we've got one flying now, and they come up out of the ocean. There's been witnesses that have seen these things. There's a lot of witnesses in Wales that Gary has interviewed that have seen these things, and they tend to fly up the coast, they tend to fly inland, and then when they get to the top of the triangle, the top line of the triangle is, funnily enough, Liverpool, Manchester and the Mersey Valley. It's where I live.
You mentioned, yeah. What's it called? Cardigan Bay?
Yes.
Cardigan Bay, it's like a shirt. Or a jacket or something. So this bay is filled with shirts?
No, I mean, the funny thing is we actually have a place over here called Cardigan in Wales, and that's not where the cardigan was invented. You're into the weird world of British linguistics there. Now, this particular bay, I mean, if you look at the British Isles, it's probably useful to tell people where this thing happened. If you look at the British Isles, you look at sort of the mainland, sort of halfway down on the left-hand side, there's this part of the country that juts out called Wales. And if you're imaginative and you sort of look at it, the island of Anglesey looks like a pig's ear, and then it goes down and you've got like a pig's snout sticking out at the bottom, so it looks a bit like a pig's head. Well, Anglesey and Cardigan Bay and Clonilla are about halfway down the brow of the pig. So it's about halfway between the island of Anglesey and, say, Cardiff, which is at the bottom of Wales. They're sort of halfway between the two. So it's worth saying that. I mean, obviously, we'd show a map and give a location in the book, but that's where they are. And this bay, you know, has unidentified water-based, you know, UAPs, as they're now affectionately known, that rise up out of it. And they are seen quite regularly. A lady came to me at a conference, and she said, I was an art college student, she said, in Aberystwyth. And it could even have been the same time when this crash happened, the same beginning of January 83, she said. And I woke up one day, I opened my curtains, and I could see a light out in the bay. She said, so I had my camera handy, and I grabbed my camera, and then all of a sudden this thing came up out of the bay. So I photographed it. Now, needless to say, she didn't have anything with her at this conference. So I said, look, you know, here's my number, here's my contact details. Please send me more information and send me a scan of the photo. Anyway, I never heard anything else. Never heard anything else after that, which is a shame. But there are a lot of very similar stories that have been told to Gary and his ufology group. There's been quite a few stories from that area. And like I say, these things are seen quite regularly.
You know, one thing I admire about the British and the language is that you have place names where it seems like they strung a bunch of random letters together, struggled to pronounce them, and you think, is this a place that you live in, or is it someone's password?
Yeah, Wales. Wales is the place for that. I'm going to abbreviate the world's longest place name, which I think is on Anglesey. It's Lantisilingogogoff, but it's got goodness knows how many other letters. I can't remember how many letters long it is, but it's huge. And I struggle with the Welsh language anyway, having just written a book on King Arthur as well. I mean, that, you know, archaic medieval Welsh, don't even go there. So I feel your pain, you know. Oh, dear.
You know, and you might as well speak Klingon.
Well, actually, the British probably do find learning Klingon quite easy. Yeah. So, I mean, Clonilla, where the village where this thing came down, it's spelt with double L at the beginning of it. Double L-A-N-I-L-A-A-R. So, you know, it's... yeah, by the book. That's all I'm going to say is by the book. Then I don't have to say the name.
Or you could buy the book and pick up names you couldn't believe exist. Tim?
Mm.
You had mentioned earlier in the program that shortly after this incident, authorities came in and cut the woods down. This isn't the first time that that's happened in Wales, and I'm trying to think of, is it Benbow, am I pronouncing that correctly? There was another book that Philip Battle released where after the family had videotaped a series of very mysterious lights over these woods, about 2 weeks later, the authorities came in and cut all the woods down.
Yes, it does seem to be a repeating pattern. I think I've said it before, there's definitely a playbook in operation here. When you look at the way they dealt with Roswell, and then you look at the way they dealt with this particular incident at Clonilla, then you start to look, like you say, a little bit wider at other incidents. There is, you know, clearly on a shelf somewhere, there's a green MOD manual for how to deal with this kind of incident, and they play it that way pretty much the same every time, you know, so you can predict what's going to happen, which I think was, you know, that was what was in Gary's mind when he rather urgently wanted to get back to the site and recover as much as he possibly could before anybody else got there. You know, Erwell said had he known what was going to happen, he would have called Gary in first before he mentioned it to anybody else. But, you know, hindsight's a great thing. Certainly it's a shame we don't actually have any photographs of the debris on site. You know, that would have just been miraculous, but we don't. But yes, other things, yeah, there are other things that have striking similarities to this. Between Gary and Philip, I think they've pretty much got Wales covered.
When they cut the woods down, did they cart the trees off, or did they just cut them down and just leave them in place?
Oh, no. This is very serious, this, because Gary did go back. He did go back and visit Erwell for a third visit, you know, as had been arranged. And Gary said when he got there that all the trees were gone. So they were taken off site. Worse than that, there was a big yellow bulldozer still parked on the Forestry Commission land. So they weren't satisfied with just getting rid of all of the greenery. They were clearly, you know, bulldozing the ground as well. So the odds of actually finding anything there now are probably zero. I mean, 40 years on, I'd be fairly certain they would replant it. And it will have regrown. So, you know, you're into a difficult situation there. But no, they were deadly serious. They really got stuck in and they really shifted the stuff away.
We're going to shift something else away for a few minutes, which is this discussion. Then we'll be back talking about Europe's Roswell or whatever it was with Gene and Tim and Mark. You're in
the Pedicast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life. But before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Is there an official UK government explanation for this?
That's an easy question to answer at the moment. No. The Freedom of Information request that went in asked some really specific questions. I'm probably going to write an article about that at some point in the new year, because it's probably worth putting that out there. But it asked all of the best questions you could ask about it and just got the standard no answer back. No, we have no knowledge of this. We, you know nothing sort of thing. Contrary to popular belief and what certain other ufologists have said, we don't have an official department, if you like, to deal with this. There isn't a Mulder and Scully over here. There never has been. Yes, things do get passed around the MOD, but most of it actually ends up going sort of on a base-by-base basis. If you look at things like the Rendlesham incident and stuff like that, you know, a lot of things that happen in military bases are controlled by those particular military bases, which is where we're going next with our Freedom of Information Acts. We're going to scatter out a bit and go a bit wider and see if anybody else knows anything. But no, there isn't really. As I said, there'll be a green book somewhere on a shelf marked MOD for how to deal with a situation like this. But, you know, beyond that, I don't think there's any kind of department dealing with it, other than perhaps the Men in Black, but I don't think they're government, I think they're military. Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
But where would the Men in Black be involved with this?
Why would they be involved? Because it potentially is the recovery of extremely sensitive material. Doesn't really matter where it comes from, I guess, whether it's top secret or alien or somewhere in between. And that's a familiar pattern, I believe, for the United States as well. You know, the same sort of guys turn up with the same kind of agenda and you know, behave in basically the same way. I don't believe, as some people do, that these Men in Black are aliens. I don't think they're, you know, aliens dressed up to look like humans or shapeshifters or whatever. You know, I'm more inclined to go down the movie route. I think the Men in Black are as human as the rest of us. They just know stuff. You know, they know more than us. And they're doing a job at a level that's beyond our pay grade at the moment.
I wonder sometimes with Men in Black that they are only around just to fool people. It's a disinformation thing. Well, there must be something secret because they've got all these weird guys in the black suits running around talking to people about their flying saucer sightings or whatever. It has nothing to do with reality.
Well, Gary seemed to think it was fairly real. The guys that turned up on his front doorstep, he was seriously not impressed. You know, and you are talking now back in the 1980s. So, you know, the popularization of such characters hadn't really occurred back then.
If you pay attention to the UFO field, they've been talking about Men in Black in the UFO field since the 1950s.
I was going to say the first book was the 1950s. They hadn't turned up over here. We'd not had any contact with them. By popularization, I mean, yes, it appeared in print, but I don't think the majority of people would necessarily associate them automatically with the military or the UFO community. Secret Service, yes. Strange Department, yes. You know, that's where the theorization that these things are not human, they're alien, that's where that started creeping in. But, yeah, no, Gary was definitely, you know, he was positive that these people were real and that they were quite serious, you know, and they wanted the material back. It's funny how he told me, actually, because he could have told me on camera, you know, we could have included it in the documentary, but he chose to wait until the cameras were off. He doesn't mind the fact the story's out now, clearly, otherwise, you know, he would have said something about it. But back then, he didn't really want to include it in the documentary. Because, frankly, in the UK, I think most ufologists thought the idea was a bit flaky, the idea of the Men in Black. But he was genuinely shocked, you know, when they turned up on his doorstep. And as I said, he kind of told me the story off the record, you know, because he just didn't know where it was going. So, yeah. Yeah, I do remember the book. I do remember the book that had the Men in Black in. I might even have a copy of it somewhere.
They knew too much about flying saucers.
Yes, that's it. They knew too much. Yeah, that's it. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That's where we learn about Albert K. Bender, learned about Men in Black in the other part of the world, things like that. I think it was the first and probably the last totally serious book that Gray Barker wrote.
Yeah, I remember the cover because it had, you know, black shadows shaded onto the cover. It was quite a very 1950s cover. I think it was yellow and blue on white with these black shadows. I can remember the cover quite distinctly. I'll have to go rooting. I've got 10,500 books in my library. It's in there somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, in the case of Gray Barker, what he did over the years was to become so frustrated with the field, he started poking fun at it. While pretending to be serious, he'd pull a few stunts, as they say.
Yeah, that's what I suspected. But this visit on Gary definitely wasn't a stunt. I think it was quite serious. And true to the word, they've never reemerged. They've never come back. But then for Irwell to observe the same kind of characters on site, I mean, he said the cleanup operation was like a scene from a James Bond movie. You know, so clearly, you know, these guys are involved, but on a very high level.
They actually, by the way, had a revised edition of Venue to Much About Flying Saucers where John Keel had an introduction. That's the one you can buy now, or try to buy it.
Do you know, I had no idea it had been re-released. If I've got it anywhere, it would probably be my dad's copy, be my dad's old copy, because he was the one that got me interested in all this. He had Flying Saucers Have Landed, George Adamski and Desmond Leslie. He had that first edition. I think it only had a blue canvas cover, and I read that when I was growing up. I wasn't that impressed by it, but it kind of got me into the subject matter, if you know what I mean.
I'm looking at the cover right now. Blue cover, dark shadows, flying saucers. The true story of what happened to certain researchers and investigators who found out where the saucers come from. That's the original cover.
Wow, that's it. That's the one. That's as I remember it. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
I used to have that book. I think I actually bought a copy. I mean, later I knew Barker and he would have sent me one. He was not averse to sending me copies of his books. But then it's something I bought somewhere, probably on the remainder stand. You know, when a book was out of print or they had remainder copies that weren't sold, they'd stick them on a closeout rack. And that's where I frequented. That's where I went to get a lot of the UFO books that I had collected in the early days. I didn't have money to spend as a teenager, so I got the closeouts for $1 apiece. We'll get into more of many things with Mark, Gene, and Tim here in
The Pentacast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Most folks don't realize this fact. Our country is only 4 missed meals away from chaos, and those meals can vanish fast. In a national emergency, fragile supply chains break down and will wipe grocery store shelves clean in a matter of hours. Before this happens, there's something you should do today. That's stock up on emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply is the company millions of American families trust for their emergency supplies. You should, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each kit contains delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, heirloom seeds, and other survival necessities. Order by 3 p.m. and your items ship the same day, fast. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. Those who know what's coming, prepare before the chaos starts. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA News. News Update. It's Sunday, December 24th, Christmas Eve, and the gifts are hopefully bought, wrapped, and under your tree. Still some stores open right now for 11th hour shoppers. Now, as for the weather, folks in the Dakotas will have a white Christmas. Not so much in the Northeast. New York City, for example, the high will reach 47 degrees. Boston, a high this Sunday of 45, with no precipitation in the forecast. And in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, a high of 76 for Christmas Eve, 77 on Christmas Day, so Santa will no doubt arrive in his big red bathing suit. More now from USA's John Schaefer.
If you live in the Midwest and the Northeast, you may find your dreams of a white Christmas dashed this year. The remaining patches of snow on the ground in those regions are expected to disappear by Christmas Day on Monday. I'm John Schaefer.
And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Have you ever watched a video on the internet and found yourself waiting for the skip the ad button? The reason this takes a few seconds is because the video delivery companies get to collect impression commission, and the viewer never sees the advertisement. The company still pays full price to run the ad. Does this sound like a scam to you? Is there any wonder why internet ads are so ineffective? For over 100 years, radio has been a proven source for companies' messages. Radio listeners are engaged and want to support the companies that sponsor the shows they're so passionate about. Simple companies like window treatments, security, pillow companies, and more have been able to break away from the big box stores, building multi-million dollar businesses. Find out what radio can do for your business. Call 877-996-4327 or advertise at gcnlive.com. That's advertise at gcnlive.com.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
You'll notice, Mark, that when Tim does our closer there, our little stinger, note that he's trying to imitate a man in black. Now, parenthetically, of course, the main character of Gray Barker's book was Albert K. Bender. Bender came out with a book called Flying Saucers and the Three Men, where he said the beings he contacted were aliens from the planet Kaik, spelled with a Z. Don't ask me to explain how Kaik is not Kazakh, but that's where it was. Mm-hmm.
So it's not just us Brits that have a strange way of spelling things. Oh, dear.
No, it was Albert Bender and Gray Barker, because in Flying Saucers and the Three Men, Barker published it, and Barker had a very distinctive writing style, and you could tell he heavily edited that book.
Yes. Yeah.
You were saying...
I was just thinking back, just kind of reminiscing on I think I got my copy from probably from one of the conferences. We used to have a great conference there called Probe. That's where I met Gary. And you used to be able to find sort of back catalogue books and stuff on a lot of the stalls there. And I built my collection up by buying stuff over the years from such second-hand traders at events like that.
It was a fun time, I'll tell you. The early days of the UFO field, when we were all innocent.
Well, the first UFO I ever saw was over here. We had a summer 1976. It's a very memorable summer. We used to get real summers and real winters. 1976 was so hot. It just stayed hot day and night, and it baked all of the surrounding farmland solid. And I went out camping with some friends of mine from school at the time. I think it was 14. And we all pile off up to this farmer's field with the old style canvas tent, you know, with the wooden pegs. And we got there, suddenly discovered to our horror that we couldn't put the tent up because you couldn't get the pegs in the ground. They were just splitting. So we ended up spreading the tent out as a ground sheet, and we all fell asleep in our sleeping bags on top of it. So under the stars, fabulous, fabulous star fields. Over here you get lots of light pollution from the cities and what have you. Fabulous, fabulous star fields, loads of them, just, you know, because light pollution from the local cities tends to obliterate the skies most in most places. But this was out in a village, way out in the countryside, the middle of nowhere, and we're all asleep. I don't know what it was that woke me up, but it was definitely in the early hours, and you could see all these stars. And back in the 70s, we didn't have things like satellites and what have you, so things didn't tend to move. But I sort of woke up and I'm looking across at the horizon, and you can see this really bright star, looks like a planet, but it's moving and it's coming towards me, and it's coming across the sky. I'm thinking, what on earth is that? It stayed really high up. It stayed the size of a star, a pinprick of light. And then when it got directly over the top of me, it just went bang, 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 from horizon to horizon at huge speed, right across the star field. And then it shot back to where it was in the middle, over the top of me, and disappeared. And I'm like, what on earth was that? What did I just see? So at that point as a teenager, I suddenly started to pay considerably more attention, shall we say, to what was going on up there. And forward to 1981, and I'd finished doing, I'm a professional drummer, or was a professional drummer for many, many years. I was doing sessions in the studios in Liverpool and Manchester. I'm coming back in the early hours, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and close to where I live here, there's a big hill. You can go on top of the hill and you can see the whole valley from sort of Liverpool to Manchester. You can see all of it. So I'm on top of this hill, winding down, because I think I'd just done a sort of 12, 13 hour studio session. And as I'm looking out towards Liverpool, there's a coal powered power station down there, and it's billowing out these big clouds of steam from the top of the cooling towers. And all of a sudden, through the top of the steam over this tower comes something that looks a bit like a helicopter, but clearly isn't. Nobody in the right mind flies a helicopter over the top of one of these towers, because the steam's coming out the same temperature as a kettle, you know, as it's 40 degrees plus. Anyway, this thing comes flying through the steam, and it's lit up like one of the tiny scout ships in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So you've got these lights that are scanning. They're scanning everywhere. Most of them are white, but every now and again they just suddenly change to red and then blue and then white, and they're going all the time. And this thing's moving quite slowly, so it moves up the north bank of the river. And I'm watching it for a couple of minutes, and it gets sort of level with the town, with Warrington. So it's outlined now by the light pollution in the background. You can see a sort of shape. And then all of a sudden, all the lights go off, and it looks to be about the size of a small truck. It's about the size of a 7.5-ton truck, just for an instant. And then all of a sudden it shoots vertically up at hugely fast speed, just vanishes into the night sky. It's like, you know, stars with a few clouds around sort of sky. Anyway, this thing just shoots up and disappears. And the funny thing is, 11 years later, there's a book came out called Mysteries of the Mersey Valley by Jenny Randalls, who's quite a famous UK ufologist person. And on the cover of this book is a flying saucer with a light coming down on the same trajectory as the power station. So I buy this book and I'm going through it, and sure enough, there's a plane coming into Liverpool Airport, and as the pilot's looking down, he can see something that looks a bit like an old-fashioned opaque light bulb, a circular thing, that's hovering below him. So he comes in, he files a report, and, you know, mentions this UFO. And then adjacent to the industrial estate where this thing was seen hovering is a campsite on top of a hill. And there's a group of witnesses there who see the same thing but side on. And they said, all of a sudden, this glowing shape switched all its lights on. And they described the same thing, these white lights changing to blue and red. And it shot over them, over the top of them, and headed off down the River Mersey and then through the steam on the power station. So 34 years after the whole thing happened, I've actually stitched all the accounts together for the book. So that is probably my best UFO encounter, because you've got a witness over on the Wirral, and then you've got the witnesses over on the hill, the campers. Then you've got me down this end, and they see the beginning of it, and I see the end of it. Now, when you join all of those eyewitnesses together, you've got a straight line of about 14 miles, and it runs east-west. So this thing, very clearly in the space of about 5 or 10 minutes, came shooting from their direction, straight through the steam, and onto my direction before it disappeared. So you've got a complete account. I mean, it's taken, like I said, 34 years to put that together. But I was just amazed. It's incredible. I saw that. I was absolutely convinced that there's something going on. And that was 1981. So that was actually 2 years before the crash in Wales. As I said earlier in the interview, it's the north line, if you like. It's the top part of the triangle where these things turn up, that this thing was flying sort of, if you like, down the top edge of the triangle. And I'd seen that. So without me even realising it, I was involved in what was going on at that particular time. I never actually found out that anything had crashed until 10, 15 years later when I met Gary. So that, if you like, was... It's funny, really. We've just put the introduction at the end. Oh, dear.
So it's like one of those stories where it starts at the end and moves very slowly towards the beginning. Or you have multiple flashbacks where you have no idea where you're at. You know, like the next scene, it's 15 years earlier, but normally there would be a sign saying 15 years ago. But there isn't, so you have to think, wait a minute, how come they're wearing different clothing and they look to be younger? Tell us that's 15 years ago. I guess they want the people who watch them to stop just slumbering when they watch the movie or TV show and think what's going on. We've got Mark Olley, Tim Swartz, Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
The Silver Lungs Generator is the only all-encompassing professional class product for producing endless colloidal and ionic silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. With recent regulations threatening the sale of silver-based supplements, now you can secure yourself and your family by producing your own silver solutions anywhere, anytime. You can have the peace of mind knowing that you can create endless supply of silver anytime, anywhere, for any application. The Silver Lungs Generator is a one-time purchase that requires no maintenance nor replacement parts for the life of the unit. This product was designed to be an invaluable part of your vital preparations. For a detailed report on the differences between ionic silver, colloidal silver, and what most silver solution manufacturers are producing, please visit our website at www.silverlungs.com for more information on why you should be producing your own silver solutions right from your home forever.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. That's 800-524-3810.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So we have one more segment on our main show with Mark Ollie, author of many sorts of things, but including Europe's Roswell, 40 Years Since Impact, which has George Adamski's fake flying saucer photo in the book. They did that, those photos, by the way, with hubcaps, with lamp lights and a few other things, and the base were either ping pong balls, golf balls, or GE light bulbs, depending on which fake you saw.
Yeah, in honor of that, we did exactly the same thing when we came to do the documentary in 2008. I bought a 1950s bed warmer, which is this circular flying saucer-shaped thing that has a light bulb inside it, and you used to shove it in a bed and plug it in and it would heat up. Well, I got this 1950s bed warmer. I painted it the same shade of green as you know, the metal we had was, and stuck, like you say, rubber balls on the bottom of it. I got my youngest lads to build a forest, a little miniature forest, and then the chap that was doing the camera work is one of my eldest sons. He actually got hold of this thing on the end of a fishing line, and it looks superb in the documentary. It's an amazing piece of, you know, high tech, high expense special effects. You know, it flies in at the top corner, it turns towards the camera and it zooms down and it smashes through the forest. Only at that point you get a little bit of CGI, because you get a couple of explosions, a load of debris. We didn't think there was enough debris on it, but that's what it is. It's a model, you know, it's a model of a saucer. And I've done many models for different productions over the years, so I thought I'd use up some of the shots in the book, mainly to show what this thing wasn't. You know, at no point do we have any evidence that that's necessarily what it is. So I'm kind of playing devil's advocate with the extra shots that are in there, which I hope people appreciate.
So Tim was about to ask a question, and then he was interrupted rudely by somebody at the door. So Tim, we need to know, because of the kind of show we've been doing today with Mark, was one or more of the men in black?
Well, I mean, with the Men in Black, you know, it's always been traditionally three, but as in most cases, it's actually usually just one, maybe sometimes two, and not necessarily men, women in black as well. Jenny Randall's Mark had talked about Jenny Randles earlier. She wrote a really good book about Men in Black, and a lot of the cases that she reported on involved women in black.
That sort of speaks even more to it being a department of the military rather than it being aliens dressed up.
Of course, this is a spoiler, but in the first Men in Black film, Linda Fiorentino plays someone who becomes, towards the end of the film, a woman in black.
I did want to ask a question, though, while we've got the time and the rest of the show here. This area in Wales, does it continue to see UFO activity?
That's a very good question. And the short answer to that is yes. Having, shall we say, reconnected with Gary over the publication of the book and the material that we're releasing, Gary has gone a lot further in giving information about the area. And there's a lot of stuff goes on. He himself has witnessed quite a lot of stuff. He's come very close to these craft, these hovering alien vehicles. He's actually come face to face with them on a number of occasions because he lives in that area. You know, he lives in that part of Wales. And if you talk to the people in the villages, in isolated parts of Wales, then a lot of them have had, you know, experiences of things going on. So, in a sense, although people are aware of what the military are up to, obviously there's, you know, jet aircraft zipping up and down the valleys all the time, and things going on with the local air bases, there is also something else distinctly different happening in that area, that when you get up close and personal with it, you know, it clearly isn't human. It's not one of ours. Mm-hmm. It's something that somebody else is up to. So, yes, yeah, it is quite a hot spot for things happening.
It sounds like that Gary's experience, you could write a whole new book just on the stuff that he's gone through.
It's funny with Gary. He admits himself in the things he's put into print over the years that, you know, he's not a researcher, he's not a writer in terms of books and things like that. He is a gatherer of information. You know, he runs the local UFO group quite sharply, I dare say. You know, he's on the ball, but he's not the sort of person that feels he can go that step further and start to publish stuff. He has gone on record. I mean, obviously, he's gone on record for the documentary in 2008, but he did a conference over here where he was interviewed by somebody on, I think it's on YouTube. You'll find it on YouTube. I believe it was 2018, the interview he did. He's older, you know, he's 10 years older than the documentary. But when they actually interviewed him, he talked a lot about the extra stories that he had. But the story of this particular incident, this Europe's Roswell, the details never change. He's so consistent. Even when he says things a different way or he puts in extra detail. I mean, I did go to that interview and I have expanded the book with material from that. But he doesn't change the story at all. You know, he's a totally credible, consistent researcher and witness. And if that wasn't the case, well, yeah, I very much doubt I'd have gone as far as I have with the whole thing, you know, as a case.
Now, you've got a piece of this debris in a keychain yourself. Do you keep it safe and sound so the Men in Black, you know, won't sneak into your house sometime and try to spirit it away?
Yeah, it's quite safe. I keep it in it's got its own tiny little flight case, and I do take it out quite regularly to events. Surprisingly enough, Philip, the publisher, managed to get hold of one of the key rings as well. They're not impossible to find within the UFO community. Like I said, there was probably about 100 of these keyrings distributed. And then Philip also got 3 sort of keyring size fragments for analysis as well. So there's a bit of this material floating around now, more so than there was. But no, I keep mine very very safe. But it is accessible. People can see it when I do events. I do take it out with me.
So what next? I mean, what do you hope the future will bring you when it comes to this case?
Well, it'd be nice if the whole thing came full circle and the information we've gone thus far led to some kind of a conclusion. To keep it punchy, you know, back to what I've said right through the interview, is it one of theirs, is it one of ours, or is it back engineered? If we can answer that question, then I would say we've reached a suitable conclusion. So in a sense, we kind of know what it is, we just don't know where it comes from. So that'd be my wish for the whole case, to be able to sort of round it off and just conclude it with a nice punchy sharp last chapter. But, you know, we're dealing with the MOD, we're dealing with disclosure, and it might never happen.
Hey, for those who want to find out more what Mark Olley does, and it's a lot, where do they find you?
Okay, really simple. If you want the publications, I do go to Amazon. They're all on Amazon. There's 9 books in total on there, so pay, click. A few days later, it comes zooming through your letterbox. If you want to see any of the back catalogue productions I've done, television series, documentaries, go to Drake Michigan on YouTube, and you'll find them all on YouTube. And if you want to contact me, I'm on Facebook. So come and find me on Facebook, and as long as you're not Fifi Trixabelle with a fairy or a rainbow as your photograph, you know, if you're a real person, I'll accept you, and you can chat away to me on Messenger. So it's Amazon, YouTube, Facebook.
And you can find us on Threads, Facebook, and X, or whatever it's going to be called next week. As the Paracast, check out branded merchandise at theparacast.shop with 4 different logos to choose from, theparacast.shop. And we also offer our streaming service, the Paracast Plus, at theparacast.plus. You get this show free of the network ads, better audio, and the exclusive, amazing bonus after the Paracast podcast, where you never know what's going to happen next, and we don't either. And Mark's going to return for that, and we don't know what he's going to do, but we'll figure it out once we get there. We got the lowest subscription rates ever, theparacast.plus. Check out theparacast.plus. Mark Olley, it's always been a delight to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A 1-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time.
That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperT.com.